The SBS Cycling Podcast is brought to you by Tanara.
Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. Welcome to the SBS Cycling Podcast. It is stage 5 of the Tour de France. And of course, I am with Dave McKenzie. And wait to hear where we are, because it's a little piece of paradise, Maka.
It is a beautiful piece of paradise. We're on the coastline. Plenty of tourists, probably literally a few Tour de France fans.
Yeah, literally feet in the sand.
Yeah, we are literally, yeah, it is lovely. It is absolutely stunning. Blue sky, bit of a cool breeze, but...
We're loving it.
The stage I'll tell five. You who gave everyone else a cool breeze today. Yeah. The man himself, who we predicted.
In the coffee
Remco.
Of clarity.
Yeah.
Remco Evenepoel. And before we start talking about the time trial for the Tour de France, let's just give a quick update. We are fine. We are safe. A lot of messages I got. I'm sure you got as well.
I didn't get one, actually.
Interesting. I got 100.
You know who I want to say a big shout out to?
Uh-huh.
The Australian Embassy.
Yes.
They were amazing. Mm-hmm. We went in there at about 3 o'clock yesterday, 3 p.m. afternoon, and by 11 a.m. we had emergency passports this morning. So if you're listening, you're probably not. If you know someone there, we didn't actually get to see the woman who was so kind and got us sorted with the passports. Basically, were brought down by a security person. But massive, massive thank you
Absolutely.
To the Australian
And then
embassy.
We got the window fixed, and then we are back in business, of course, for the Tour de France.
Yeah.
I brought my klaxon with me.
And already there's a few tourists here just looking, mostly what retirees. They're like, who is this?
Anyway, stage five was a festival of speed, a speed by one man, and one man not only, but the show was absolutely stolen. And we sort of predicted it. We knew he was the man of the action. He would have earmarked that stage five. Remco Evenepoel is world champion, is Olympic champion. He's probably the best on a TT bike as we speak. Man, no surprise.
No surprises. You know, I'll probably say...
Well, there are other surprises later on.
There's some big surprises. But... Probably what I'm a little bit surprised about, I thought he might have won by more.
Okay.
Because he's so good at them, we know at the moment. And maybe his form himself, he's not at his best form per se. Mm-hmm. Not so much TT, but just general road racing. You know, he's lost a few bit of time already. Not much, but he won it. I thought he might have put some bigger gaps,
but
he did what he needed to do, but, and that was win the stage.
As a result, you're right. As a result, he's not claiming the yellow jersey because he's lost bags of time before.
Yeah.
And I say bags of time for someone that wants to be competing for the yellow jersey and for the general win.
Yeah.
He was 51 seconds down starting that TT. He's done a very good, like you said, very good performance today, but he's not in yellow tonight.
No, and I suppose when I say I thought he would have won by more, I thought he would have won by more to second, third, fourth and fifth. So I'll just quickly reel off the next four or five placings. Pogacar at 16 seconds. Affini at 33 seconds. No surprises there. He's a great time trialist. Bruno Amidei at 35. No real surprises there. He's another great time trialist.
Yeah.
Vauquelin at 49 seconds. That is a surprise ride.
Yep.
That is a brilliant ride by Vauquelin. For French fans, they should be getting excited. Lipovic at 58. The big advantage that Evenepoel got, though, was on Jonas Vingegaard. Mm-hmm. 1 minute and 21 seconds he lost.
You just ruled in the whole summary of this podcast.
Thank
you.
Done. Let's move to tomorrow's stage.
But someone like Remco, do you think he's disappointed tonight by not being able to claim the yellow? That was a big target. It could actually be one of the only time where he could claim yellow
true.
In this Tour de France if he's not in to win it. Disappointment still or happiness to feel good and happiness to win that stage?
Yeah, I think first and foremost he would have said, you know, go out and win.
Yeah.
He knows how good Pog is, and that would have been a huge bonus if he had got the yellow. That would have been dream come true sort of stuff. So I think, no, probably not. I don't think so. I think he'll be just relief. I'm not sure if relief is the right word, but a touch of, like, okay, I'm still in the game. I'm still in the game. Yeah. You know, let's move forward now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about Pogacar, because Pogacar is second on this stage. He's ridden this time trial in the Polkadot jersey. And I asked the question to Matthew Keenan, when was the last time a time trial was ridden by someone that could win this time trial in the Polkadot jersey? And his answer was 1993, Tony Reminger, the Swiss Tony Reminger. Well, he gave me a lot more answers after this. It's a bit more detailed for this podcast anyway. But how important is that performance for Tadej Pogacar if we put it in correlation with the not-so-great performance from Vingegaard?
Yeah, so basically, Pog's ticking the boxes. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got a few tests you've got to pass at the Tour de France if you want to win it. One of them is your climbing. So far, there hasn't been big climbs, but he's ticked the boxes. He's ticked the boxes on the flat quasi-crosswind days. He's missed the crashes, tick, tick, tick. And then the TT was the next test, and he's passed it with flying colours. So, you know, now you can argue all that remains are the big mountain days, and they're all to come, obviously. Yeah. So, but he's got to survive them. He's got to survive them, and you know, no doubt Vingegaard is going to try and mount a challenge at some point, you would think. So, you know, as much as Vingegaard lost 121 to Remco, he's lost 104 to Pog. It's not a disaster. It's not great for Vingegaard, but it's not a disaster.
Yeah, okay.
He can still win this bike race. So, long way to go.
We put this into perspective in a minute, because we'll talk about Ben O'Connor as well. But quick question for you. We spoke about the skin suit and how aerodynamic and how much money they are spending, a team, how much money they're spending on a swimsuit like the UAE one for Pogacar. With a UAE skin suit, does Pogacar win this TT, or does he come closer to Remco? Remco was in his own skin suit.
Yeah, yeah.
Pogacar wasn't.
Well, yeah, you're asking the wrong person, I think, because I don't know enough, like, to be hand on my heart. So I'm giving a guesstimation, which really a lot of people would be, even the so-called experts.
But
in
we talk
that
about
field.
A second a kilometre. Well, this yeah. is where we go.
Well, that's what I was going to lean to.
33
yeah,
kilometres.
33 kilometres, 16 seconds he lost by. Yeah, there's an argument to say maybe. But he was in the polka dots last night. They would have had the seamstresses or seamstress, is that what you call them?
Working on it.
Yeah, working. Yeah. They would have. It, jokes aside. They would have trimmed it, made it perfectly. They would have sized him up in that position. So it's all then about the materials used, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. And, you know, to think that, you know, 10 years ago, that would have been a stupid discussion point. Yeah. You would have gone, this is ridiculous. How could you say
what
skin
are they
suit?
On about? Yeah.
It's actually, it makes a difference these days.
And therefore, and we've concluded the subject on this question, should the Grand Tour, like the Tour de France, still provide a skin suit for the specific jerseys, or should they allow their own brands to carry that skin suit just for this? Because that creates an unfair advantage here.
Yeah.
I know the brand is protected, the sponsors and so on, but...
No, I think it's getting...
pedantic?
I think we're getting pedantic if we go to that point.
Yeah.
You know, Vanderpool had to wear the yellow jersey, of course. So from the race sponsor, all the jersey wearers.
Yeah, green, Vauquelon, white.
Look at Vauquelon. He's in the white. He did his best time trial of his life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can argue either way, can't you?
But maybe it's because the skin suit from the actual organisers is better than the Arkea. You know?
Now you're throwing another one. Yeah, yeah, that's true.
That's true.
It probably is, by the way. Yeah. It probably is.
Let's actually talk about Vauquelon, because Vauquelon did an amazing job. He's having a great season, Vauquelin. A bit under the radar.
Yeah.
But you and I, we had to look back. He finished second in Flèche Wallonne.
Yes.
He finished second at Tour de Suisse.
Yeah.
20th at Strade Bianche.
Yeah, yeah.
All these are fantastic results.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He
a bit under the radar, though.
No, 100%.
Well, until now.
We know he's good. We know he's good. And he's got some stuff. What we don't know yet, how far can he go in this Tour de France? Mm-hmm. And I said to you on the drive to our hotel this afternoon, if he can ride top 15 at the Tour, if he can not win a stage, but get some high placings, some more high placings, because he's already had a few, and run top 15. Let's say he runs top 15. Mm-hmm. He's adding another zero to his contract.
Yeah.
I would say he is getting up around, probably only on French teams. I'm not sure foreign teams. They might pay this much, but I would say his asking price would be getting up around the 900 to 1 million euro mark.
Where would he go, though, French team? You're thinking Decathlon? You're thinking Groupama? Or are you thinking Decathlon?
Well, either or.
Because I'm thinking Decathlon.
Yeah, Decathlon's a good one. And we talked about that as well. They're upping their budget big time next year.
40 million?
Yep. But, Euros. But Groupama's not a bad one either.
Yeah.
You know, who's the big team leader at Groupama? At GC Rider.
Yeah. Well, it's Godu. He's not here.
Yeah.
So, you know.
No. I think he's in a great position to be. And his contract's, well, we know he's up for negotiation at the end of the year. So, and again, you know, France is screaming out for the next heroes. Bardet's retired. Prior to Bardet, who was Groupama.
Pino,
you know, retired a couple of years ago. So, yeah, they were the two stars. And obviously there's been a few others. But
yeah, Godu is not necessarily lifting up. He finished fourth, I think, last
year. Yeah,
yeah. But he's not here because he's not in shape this year. So yeah.
This is, Vauquelin is in a great position to, you know, make headway.
Let's talk about the Aussies now. Ben O'Connor, GC.
Yep.
If I look at the result, raw data, I'm going, he had a rubbish day. But when you analyze a bit deeper, he has not had a rubbish day.
No.
Far from it.
No.
And before we analyze this, let's listen to Ben O'Connor.
Mate, really solid time trial. You look like you just got better with every time check. Crossing line 11th place, how were the sensations?
Much better than the other days, obviously. Suffered a lot from this first day crash. I haven't really been myself at all. So it's nice to actually feel somewhat strong today. And hopefully that continues now for the rest of the race, because the last couple of days sucked.
So that brings you confidence for the days to come?
Yeah, I mean, once again, it's just about actually feeling good finally. Obviously, I was sweet day one. Could kind of move wherever I wanted to. But yeah, I've been pretty pinned the last couple of days after the crash. So yeah, I enjoyed actually feeling good today.
And going into the second and third week of the race, have you identified some opportunities where you might be able to get a little bit of time back?
There's definitely going to be days, but to be honest, I actually have no idea which ones will be days where you could try something, because to be honest, the way UAE and Visma are riding, it's kind of like a who's the strongest contest.
Ben, you know, you were pretty beaten up before today. It didn't look as though it affected you too much.
No, I seem to have come out of it a little bit better. I guess you manage your own effort, so it's slightly different to, the chaos that was yesterday. And you get caught behind a crash, and it's kind of like a knock-on effect, but you just can't get back up to the front. So I guess this is probably a good one for your confidence, because you can ride to your strengths.
It doesn't sound too bad.
No, positive signs.
It sounds pretty chirpy.
Yeah.
Positive signs.
I'm happy to hear the language that he used. He's really happy about his performance. And again, he reminds, and he's not making excuses, it's just a fact. He crashed at plus 50 kilometres per hour on stage one. Like, he hit the deck hard.
Yeah.
He's lucky to still be in the race in some respects. So to finish in 21st place with an average speed of plus 51 and to lose 147 to the current world and Olympic champ over 33 kilometres, it's actually a really good ride.
And a point when we look as well, where he's fitting, he's not far from Jonas Vingegaard.
No.
So yes, Jonas Vingegaard has had not the greatest of day. We were expecting a lot more from him today.
Yeah.
But he can...
He's lost 26 seconds.
Exactly. Being 26 seconds to Vingegaard.
Yeah.
If we would have told him this in the morning, he would have gone, okay.
Yeah.
I'll take that ballpark.
Yeah. No. You know, and if you go back, he's now over 4 minutes down, right?
Yes.
On the overall. But he is well and truly in the fight for the podium.
Yes. Still, and very much.
100%. 100%. The fact that he was really positive post stage today means that he's on the mend.
Yeah.
And when you're positive about your TT performance and saying, I felt good, that is good signs.
Yeah.
That is good signs that he's on the mend. He's in 17th place, 407, as I said, right? Third place at the moment is Vauquelin at 59 seconds, but he's untested. We're talking him up. singing his praises for good reasons, but he's untested.
Mm-hmm.
Vingegaard then sits at 113. But is he on shaky ground? Time will tell. We don't know.
So that's a very good sign. And again, the body behavior seems very good from O'Connor. And like you mentioned, for Vingegaard, for the rest of this GC, all the mountains, 100% of the Bean Mountains, are still ahead of them.
Yeah.
We haven't had a serious sort of mountain day.
No.
We haven't had that.
No.
It's all ahead of them. So where Ben O'Connor is the best is in the mountains.
Yeah.
End of story.
Yeah, and this, you know, I think this is good. And you keep referring to the whole team, so I shouldn't not discount the non-Australian teammates. But obviously he knows Plappy and Durbridge a lot better. They're going to rally around him. You know, he's going to be upbeat tonight. He's going to be upbeat and go, I felt pretty good. And then, therefore, that spreads. And I'm sure Matty Hayman and Mick Partland and Peter Weaning are being positive as well, reinforcing that positivity towards him. So that spreads. So they're going to be feeling upbeat.
Yeah.
And they, you know, Ben O'Connor is a racer.
Yeah.
He will like the attacking style of the race as it unfolds moving forward now. It's to his benefit. So, no, there's still a lot of upside for Ben.
I love that we are going behind just the raw data, because I'm sure some of the press will just look at the data and go, he's out of it, he's far.
And you, the fans listening, I'm sure there's some of you saying 4 minutes, long way to go.
Absolutely.
Long way to go.
Absolutely. Yep. Any other things that you notice from that time trial that you think we should talk? I think we have to talk about Luke Plapp. Luke Plapp, first.
Top 10.
First Tour de France. So therefore, first time trial at a Tour de France. Let's listen to Luke Plapp.
So, Plappy, obviously a stage you were targeting from a long way out. Talk us through your day. Talk us through your sensations out there.
Yeah, I just wanted to sort of attack it and race basically as hard as I could and see how long I held on. I wasn't really keen on just like trying to consolidate a real even ride and maybe be somewhere in the top 10. I really just wanted to attack it and see if I could hold on and where that would end up. I was really happy up until halfway, and then just that back end bit me a lot more than I thought it did in recon. I thought it was a lot faster finish, but it actually drags on a bit and paid the price in the end.
Yeah, all your time checks were really strong all the way through. It looked like you faded a bit in the last check. Is that what happened?
Yeah. I mean, I tried to attack it. I said I wanted to go out there as if I could win the race and see how long I could hold on. But it was probably inevitable I was going to blow. I just tried to hold it as long as I could. But yeah, really paid the price towards the end there.
So still plenty of racing to come in this Tour de France. Does it now reset, set some new goals later in the race?
Yeah, I think a lot will depend on how Benno goes today. See if he can have a really good ride or just see what happens. And then I guess we'll play it by ear as a team, whether we try to consolidate or chase a break to get him back in GC or whether we go for stages. So I think we'll just play it by ear how it goes. And if there's any opportunities for me, I'll definitely take them. I think the Bastille Day and Carcassonne stage as well, I think 10 and 15 seems to be all right chances. So I might take an opportunity there.
So that was Luke Plapp. Once again, like I said just before, first Tour de France, third time trial. You know how different the time trial at the Tour de France is, because it's part of a whole complex series of stages, not just a one time trial. It's not like a 7-day races. How does Luke Plapp feel today about this? Top 10, he's fantastic.
No, I think he'd be wrapped. It's all building blocks for Luke Plapp. You know, it's all test. Each year he's testing himself against the best in the world. And each year he's improving. And that's the direction he has to go in. He's got to keep improving. The team wants to see improvement. They want to see him, you know, he's not getting paid to win national champs. I've said that before.
Yeah.
He knows that. So this is a big step in the right direction. You know, and they obviously gave him the green light to go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have given some great feedback to O'Connor as well. We talked about that last night.
Yeah.
So that would have helped himself and Durbridge. So good. Great ride by Plapp. And, you know, Almeida was only ahead of him by 3 seconds. Almeida's world class.
Mm-hmm.
And even as a time trialist, he's world class. So, no, he had good company around him.
Before we take a short break as well, I'd like to mention the crowd. Enormous. There were a lot of people around. We saw you've probably seen this on the footage. People turn up for a TT. People turn up for a time trial because you see the riders one by one. It's a spectacle. It might be a tiny bit less interesting on TV. Maybe I get this.
Well,
when you're on site, it's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
This is also a very, very strong element of cycling.
Yeah, It certainly is. And I mean, the TTs have improved, I think, in a TV perspective.
Yes, true.
In modern day, because of the number of cameras, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you're capturing. Yeah, it's better than watching it roadside in a lot of respects. But yeah, no, it was. It was a great day. Weather was good. People were loving it.
Roadside is great if you want to take photos.
Yeah.
Because they are one by one.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And you know the order. You sort of know when they're coming.
Yeah.
If you're following a little bit, you know the order. Okay, anything else?
No, I think that's a good wrap up.
That's a good wrap up.
I think we've covered all bases.
Yep. Okay, we take a short break, and then when we come back, we talk to the greatest of the greatest at the Tour de France. It's Mark Cavendish. Straight after this. Don't go away.
Tanara is Australia's leading alternative asset investment firm. From venture capital and private equity to public markets and credit, we proudly partner with business founders and companies to help them grow their businesses and create value for investors. Led by John Wiley, former chair of the Australian Sports Commission, our team brings deep experience and a shared passion for Australian sport and cycling.
Welcome back to the SBS Cycling Podcast. As promised before our break for our sponsor Tanara, let's have a chat with Mark Cavendish. I've met him in the village a few days ago. Last time we met this man, he was a lot sunnier. He was in Nice last year. Mark Cavendish, what a pleasure to see you here at the Tour de France.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you. We're at the beginning. Last time it was after. I was a bit skinnier then and a bit more tired. Now it's nice to be this side of the fence at the beginning this year.
What's the life of Mark Cavendish 1 year on? After such an amazing career, a long career on the roads, what's your life today?
I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying time with my family. I'm enjoying time doing bucket list things. I'm in a very fortunate position that I can do lots of things that I would dream of doing. And it's been a very fun first year of timing, that's for sure.
That number 35, now, we spoke a lot last year in our interview about, you know, how you were so much work going into this number 35. 1 year on, do you still reflect about what you have achieved?
Yeah, a little bit more, yeah. I'm very proud of my career. To win from the beginning to end, you know, and it feels complete, so I'm very, very happy.
Are you grateful about all the photos and all the love that you're getting here at the Tour?
Very much so. It's beautiful. I love this race. This race is special. It's given me a lot, and I'll always give my life for it as well.
I've got one question I want to ask you. Bogey, number 35. How do they correlate? And how do you live about what you're thinking about Bogey? Can he beat you? And how's that set in your mind?
Nobody thought you could be 34. Yeah. I got 35. Maybe people don't think it could be 35, but someone will get 36, whether it's Poggy or somebody else.
Okay, well, one last thing.
Mate, what do you think?
I think it's going to take time. Okay. I think it's going to take time, but it's going to be hard for him. It's going to be hard for him. That's my opinion.
Okay.
I'm no one, you know.
He's great, though. He's brilliant to watch. He's incredible, the sport. He's such a good kid as well, you know. And it's nice to see people winning, and I'm putting everything into this race, which is the greatest sporting event in the world.
You've always been a good sport for us, so thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you, man. Have a great day.
Legend that Mark Cavendish was. I think with his number 35, he starts, you know, we can hear in this interview, he starts to tremble a little bit. Well, someone is knocking at the door very quickly.
Well, he's knocked over one already. I was predicting his first win on stage seven, so he's already knocked over one.
He's more than 100 wins in his professional career, 18 wins in the Tour de France for someone like Pogacar.
And he's at 18.
18, yeah. Basically,
I'd be nervous.
You also notice in this interview, he didn't want to answer the question. He asked me, what did I know? What do I know? He doesn't know
that's
me. What
cruel.
Do I know?
You
know?
He's just retired and you had to ask him that question the tour. Mate, that's mean.
Nah,
you're a mean man.
That's what I do anyway. Anyway, that was Mark Cavendish. Of course, the horn is back. We are in Normandy. We are in this part of France, beautiful part of France, for stage six of the Tour de France. Stage six is going from Bayeux to Vire. There's a big capital for food. Vire, we'll talk about this if you want. Bayeux as well. What can you tell us about this stage, number six?
This is an interesting one. As I said before, stage seven, Mer de Bretagne, that's going to be a crucial day. But, however, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 categorised climbs, and there's a little kicker at the end. It is a lumpy day, 200-plus kilometres. This is a hard stage. Mm-hmm. They've all been hard from the start. And this is another one that I think if the wind blows and, you know, lumpy roads, there's not too many flat roads around here. So they're tough days. The road, and the roads are, you know, in Australia we talk about dead roads. It's like heavy on the wheels, heavy on the tyres. There's no speed in them. You know, these backcountry roads. It's a little bit like this around this region. I've raced around here over years ago, but always tough racing.
It's good you mentioned the weather, because the wind is definitely...
Well, it's blowing on the coastline.
You know, that was going to say, it's blowing on the coastline. You probably hear it on the microphones here as we speak. So therefore, the wind can play an issue. So crosswinds, can we see bordures as we speak? Or yeah, the team's being very wary about that?
They'll be wary of it. Look, I haven't had a really, really good look at Valleview or the map for tomorrow's yet. And also in terms of how open it is. But just looking at the profile and the lumps and the categorised climbs, look at yesterday. You know, that had five towards the end. There were six guys came in together.
Yeah,
they were cat threes
yesterday,
and cat fours.
Yesterday being stage four.
Yeah, yeah, they were cat threes and cat fours together. Mm-hmm. What did I say? Seven categorised. Yeah. Like, no matter what they are, the finale is going to be tough.
So your Pogacar, do you test Vingegaard here? When, based on the performance Vingegaard had today at the time trial, do you hammer it down? Do you test him? Do you keep on testing him, or do you just play cool?
No, you play cool. You play cool. He's in yellow. You let a brake get up the road.
Yeah.
You let a brake get up the road and take the stage and force the sprinters teams or other teams. But if you're UAE, this is where Pog did his big effort today. Cool the jets. Put it back in autopilot. And you sit and wait now. Because Vingegaard matched him on those climbs. He got spat, but he got back on.
Yeah.
And we've seen that in the bigger mountains. So Vingegaard, his form is there. He just didn't have a great time trial day. So I think the last thing Pog needs to do is expose himself to Vingegaard.
I'll reverse the question. You're Vingegaard. Do you ask for redemption the next day?
Good question. No, I think if you're Vingegaard, you've got to be patient. Okay. You've got to be patient. You've got to lick your wounds a little bit, but you've got to be patient. And you're not going to be reactive to having a bad day and saying, oh, we know the mountains are coming. Vingegaard has proven in the mountains. He's proven he can match Pog. When he's at his best, he can match Pog and beat him. So you've got to lick your wounds tomorrow and tonight for Vingegaard and then be patient.
$1 million cushion. Who wins this?
Who wins the stage?
Yeah.
Oh,
that's a tough one. It's one of those.
It's a really, yeah, it is a really hard one.
Would Van der Poel go for it?
He could.
He won't be in yellow again because Pogacar is in yellow.
I'll tell you what I will say, and I'll try and come up with a name at the end of saying this. I'll go for a breakaway to win the day. I'll say a break will win the day. And
as it goes, it could be Lenny Martinez. He's done some crazy things so far.
He's done some crazy things so far. So I will say a break will win the day. Someone like Ben Healy.
Uh-huh.
There you go. Ben Healy.
Worker.
Even his teammate, Casper Asgreen. He was in the break a couple of days ago. Riders like that. I was going to pick someone from Bahrain, but that's a good one, Lenny Martinez. Not hard enough for him.
Is it kind of a day that if De Gendt was here, you would put De Gendt as a potential winner for this?
Yeah, you could do. You could do.
So there would be De Genting.
Yeah.
It's a gear for De Genting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then there's other guys like Tom Scoynes, whether or not he'd be allowed to go on the break, lead Al Trek. So riders like that, I think. But I think a break can win the day.
Yep. That would be
it's
very interesting.
It's got to be a strong one. It's got to be solid. Yeah.
Also, you know what's solid? Moule. We are on the seaside. It's moule. It has to be.
Avec
frites. Avec frites.
Un petit peu frites.
Avec un petit peu de frites. Double moule and
mayonnaise,
one serve of frites.
Mayonnaise. I think that's
can
us.
You have frites without mayonnaise? I'm not sure that's even possible.
Yes.
Thank you, Maka.
This was
the podcast for today. Of course, tune in for stage 6. Every stroke of the pedals will be on SBS On Demand. And we will be here for you, with you, at the end of stage 6 to debrief all this. But until then, as I mentioned, it's moule time, Maka. Bye for now.
The SBS Cycling Podcast was brought to you by Tanara.